Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. This is the second of the summer specials. Last week I spoke to Rich Grove about history, which I'm not billing it very well here, but it was good. It's very interesting. Go back, check it out. You can listen to it on Acast or iTunes. This week I'm going to be speaking to folk musician Tom Mitchell. I first became aware of Tom through Twitter, just from chatting to him about Spurs, saw that he was a musician, and yeah, his tune's pretty good. Check him out. Most recently, he's played at the Spurs show live, where he, you know, just chilled out backstage with Ledley King, which is all right, isn't it? So I talked to him about that a bit. So without further ado, have a listen.
My family's from North London originally. My great grandfather actually played for Barnet, Mr. Harry Mitchell.
What position did he play?
He was goalkeeper.
Oh yeah.
He also played for a team south of the river at that time, who unfortunately migrated north sometime in the 20th century.
How come that didn't follow through then? I guess you're going to get to that.
Yeah.
I'm jumping in now ahead of the...
Yeah, he must have seen the light and just knew that they were going to come up and... shit all over North London. So Barnet was his team. Barnet is the only one he really refers to in his memoirs. My dad grew up there. We moved. He actually moved to Gloucestershire shortly before I was born. But I kind of had the North London Tottenham heritage surrounding me, and I never really knew anything else. I mean, my first memory of a game would be probably the 87 Cup final when I was five. I really started getting into it as a, I joined Junior Spurs in 1989-1990, I think, and just gone from there. You know, can't imagine life without my Spurs.
What do you think about it? Because I guess you probably just missed out on the glory era of the 80s, comparatively speaking to probably the most of your lifetime up until very recently. How do you think it sort of stacks up at the moment to everything else you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, for me, obviously what you get exposed to as a youngster for the first time, or especially what I kind of felt with football was... you'll never feel those feelings again of watching, Gazza, Lineker, and Gary Mabbutt were my little holy trinity. And the Holston logo, everything like that is Tottenham to me. But Tottenham to me now is still Tottenham, but it's a very different beast who I still love just as much as I did before. But it feels different, but it also feels... It feels strange going into games feeling like we're going to win, whereas it really wasn't that long ago. Most of my teens and 20s were spent, hoping we were going to beat Sheffield Wednesday at home, or get one of our two away wins a season or something like that. So
maybe beat Arsenal.
Maybe beat Arsenal. Maybe raise our game for one of the big boys, and then milk it for weeks and weeks afterwards. Whereas, this season, beating Arsenal, beating Man United in the last two home games of the season, neither of them felt like major events other than the final. The fact they were the final games we played against them at White Hart Lane. I mean, if we'd have beat Arsenal 2-0 at home a few years ago, we would have been, I hate to say it, but the DVD would have been out straight away.
Yeah.
And this game, yeah, it almost felt a bit strange afterwards. It was I felt more of a kind of Tottenham feeling after the 2-2 last season with the Kane goal was one of the best moments I've ever felt at White Hart Lane.
One of the greatest goals in living memory.
It was, and then ending up however many rows in front of in the shelf after that went in, it was just one of the best moments that I'll always take away from that place. Whereas this game, I was there for this one. And it was great, and it felt fabulous, but it didn't have that kind of sense of real Tottenham about it. It was just a comfortable win, and it was
very professional, wasn't it?
It was professional. It felt more like, what I'd imagine it's been like to support Chelsea under Mourinho, but without such a wanker in charge. And the fact is, we've got likeable players, we've got a likeable manager, we've got a great fan base, even though it might sound like I was just being a bit negative about it, I don't mean to. I love it at the moment. I think it's fabulous, and the feeling around the club is great. Yeah, there's always going to be the people complaining about what we don't spend or what we, obviously the armchair managers and everything. But I think that right now it's the best it's been since I've probably supported Spurs, and my early memories of what kind of really got me into the. Where I really started feeling an emotional connection to the club, I think they really were formed through the fact that it was my first ever exposure as a youngster, and we've got it so much better now.
It's quite interesting, isn't it, in a way, because there's a part of me that thinks about growing up watching some pretty abject teams on balance, and thinking about, like you're saying, those moments that you would jot out in your calendar if you're thinking about, can we beat Arsenal, maybe beat Man United, or can we get an away win somewhere? And it tends to be that when I think back to it, that you'd almost think back then, when you're supporting a team that's perhaps more in a lower mid-table kind of stratosphere that we probably were back then, that then it would be all about the team and it would be all about kind of rallying behind that. But if I'm brutally honest, I kind of, when I think about it, it was, to me, I'm obviously a Spurs fan, but you would obviously tend to rally behind the most positive aspects of the club. And one thing I think Spurs have always managed to do, be it because we've had a bit of money or because we have still a bit of prestige from what we once were, we've always at least had a couple of really decent players. You know, if it's been Ginola, if it's been Berbatov or Sheringham or... he who shall not be named. We've always had at least a star player that you kind of feel could walk into any team in the league.
Yeah.
And perhaps a part of it is that we rallied behind those individuals a bit more. Whereas now, we have so many great players. But it seems to be that now you rally behind the whole team, the whole club. Everything feels like it's... more complete, and I'm not really making any clear point here. I never do.
I think you're right. I mean, there obviously are. I mean, Berbatov's still my favourite player I've ever seen at the Lane.
Interesting.
I think because when he left, I was, and the manner in which he left, I was gutted. But
when he fancied it, he was
brilliant. Is the Bolton game where Keane got sent off, just the best non-goal scoring centre forward performance I've seen. But 2000-2001, when we signed Rebrov, we had a diabolical rest of the team really then, and as it turned out, he
really contributed to that.
Yeah, but because he was our record signing, because we've been crying out for a striker for two or three years before that to complement Messrs Armstrong and Everson, when we signed him, we were obviously excited. We thought we'd got the media were telling us we'd got the better one of him and Shevchenko, and for that whole season I was rooting for him so much, and I was behind him, and I was just there wanting to worship him in the same way I'd worship Ginola and Gazza. But obviously it never really happened for him. But that is an example, I think, of a season where we didn't have a team to to really get behind. We didn't have a manager to get behind, God knows. And but we had a player who was our record signing. We really wanted it to work for him, and obviously it never did. But
it's like the proto Soldado, wasn't it?
Yeah,
really?
Exactly. But there was one game where he really did turn it on, and that was the West Ham quarter final, which actually ended up being George Graham's last game in charge, when he got his that great volley from
yeah.
I can't remember who took the throw in. I think it was. But anyway, yeah, and then he got another goal in the second half. And Gary Doherty scored one of the worst headers I've ever seen. Just before we could remember that in Sunderland that season, he scored two of the worst goals ever as well to win it.
Didn't he? Did he get a hat trick?
No, we got two. Stephen Clements got the other one. But yeah, so that's it. I mean, that season was there. We're cheering on one player and really hoping he was going to do it, because our other signings that season were, I think, Ben Thatcher, who was. That's said really, and Neil Sullivan, who I like Sully.
I like Sully,
and he had a few great games against Arsenal more often than not. But and then obviously Hoddle came in, and we really wanted that to work as well, and for a few months it looked like it would, and then it didn't. But throughout that whole period, it was always just individual players, and or in Hoddle's case, the manager, who we were really trying to get behind, And now, like you say, we've got a team of players who are just so, they seem so down to earth. They seem to all get on. You know, whether we're being naive to think that, and we're just looking at them thinking, "Oh, great bunch of lads." You know, they're doing it for the love. Obviously, they're not. But we like to think that
6 1/2 dozen.
Exactly.
That's what you got to try and tell yourself.
Exactly.
A bit, right.
Exactly. But yeah, so you end up having your kind of your support and love for the club almost diluted more across it now through the people you see on that pitch. Rather than just going along to watch Berbatov or Ginola or whatever.
It is strange, isn't it? Because football is changing. I think a lot of the ire will get directed at the club, but football as a sport is changing. So these kind of commercial decisions that the club will make, like the cheese room and all this kind of thing in the new stadium, as much as it can be galling, it's a mixed bag, right? Some of it is Spurs making a conscious decision to do this, but it's also, you know, we're keeping up. We don't, as it stands, have the type of disposable income, shall we say, of clubs like City, of clubs like Chelsea as well. And I guess we are probably very much following that model that Man United has set out, where they created for all the money they're spending now, and I know they have untold amounts of commercial partnerships. It kind of is self-made, really, isn't it? They built themselves into that position to do what they're doing now, and I think that's why people don't really give them as much stick as perhaps they have done to City and Chelsea, PSG,
exactly. Those type of clubs. Yeah, I mean, we used to hate Man United because they were successful, whereas now. We've seen, like, say, Chelsea, City, etc. They're coming from nowhere, spending money which they haven't built themselves, and if it means us selling cheese and building the longest bar in Europe, which I'm quite excited about, to be honest.
Cheese room. Yeah, it is quite weird.
It is.
Cheese room.
But if we're getting into bed with the NFL and everything, if we're making our own money doing that, in order to continue competing at this level, then that's fine with me. You know, you can't just stay in a romantic era of just thinking that we can do everything on the pitch and just, and that's that.
How did you feel at the end of last season, sort of saying goodbye to White Hart Lane? Did you go to the last the United game, or was the Arsenal game your?
The Arsenal game was my final one.
The same here, exactly the same.
So it felt really strange walking out for the last time. But I got a ticket. I had a physical ticket for the game, which I was really chuffed with, because a friend of mine, I didn't get tickets through loyalty points. But a friend of mine, Hector, managed to. He has some kind of involvement with AIA, and we managed to get some tickets with kind of quite commercial block. But who cared? You know, it was we got to watch the last ever North London derby, and it was up in the shelf. So. It was. It felt very, very strange going in, and even stranger going out. But what a game to finish with, and you know, the Man United game, I wasn't in the stadium, but I was there at N17, and the atmosphere was just incredible.
Pretty emotional. It was good. I was working. I was in France at the time for the Man United game. I managed to sort of like get back into my hotel with the crappy Wi-Fi and watch the stream of the farewell, and I still had tears on my face and everything. I know it's a bit pathetic to say, but it was nicely done, wasn't it, Buzz Burst?
It was, and I think Theo Delaney deserves a lot of credit for that, because he I know how much work he put into it. And I watched it from the Antwerp performing a few Chaz and Dave songs for the crowd who came out of the lane that day. They obviously had it up on the big screen there, and I was playing songs while players were coming out, and I was just, you know, like I say, I felt my face get a bit wet, I'm not gonna lie, especially seeing a few of the players who weren't ever like big names, but I'll always have a big soft spot for Alan Nielsen. And seeing
Simon Davies,
yeah.
A lot of people scoffed when he came out, but you know, he was one of the best players of that era.
He was. When we signed him in Etherington at the same time, from Peterborough, you know,
championship manager, stalwart size too, mate.
Absolutely. So it was a really good ceremony. I mean, it could have been really cheesy. It could have been anything, but I think it was perfect. And well done for organising the rainbow at the end as well, because that was kind of what tipped it off. So.
Which was pretty spectacular, that, right?
Yeah. Made some good photos.
Yeah, I noticed you. It was very good. You're doing my job well for me there, Tom. The segue into the music, because that is one of the main reasons today in your role as a musician. What you take us through?
So yeah, no, I've played guitar since I was 10 or 11, 35 now, so yeah, can't work out what that is, but yeah, quite a long time. When I was at school, I've always loved music, but I've always loved really kind of old man music. My dad was always playing Pink Floyd, Rolling Stones, Dire Straits,
good man.
And the Kinks and whatnot. I grew up listening to really good guitarists.
Is he a musician as well?
No, he's not. He likes to think he can play Free Falling by Tom Petty, the opening three chords. He can't even do that right. He loves his music, and he's very much responsible for getting me into just listening to good bands and good musicians from a young age. I was in school bands until, you know, all the way through till sixth form, and went to uni. Kind of didn't do as much music at uni, but then picked up again in the mid 2000s, where I was playing with Duffy for a while, which was probably the pinnacle. And it has always been.
How was that?
It was an experience. She's obviously, she kind of emerged at the same time as our darling Adele. And they were kind of neck and neck for a little while, but obviously Adele's gone on to much bigger things, and Duffy's hasn't.
But, are you doing that in a live capacity or session, or?
Yeah, a bit of both. And spent a lot of time in Putney, where she was based for most of 2006, 2007 kind of time, it was really good, and that was back when I was very much playing guitar for other people. I wasn't anything more than a backing singer. And I just consider myself as someone who just go and play other people's songs for them, and that's all I really felt like I needed to do at the time. And then
you needed the sex appeal on stage, didn't you? Is that what it was?
That's exactly it. I just
get the punters through the door.
Exactly, I had to do it. After that kind of finished, I ended up playing with numerous other singers, John Madden, Julie Davies, the Cadbury Sisters, all of which were really good experiences. And then after that, about four years ago, I just decided to start writing and recording my own stuff. I bought, got a Mac with Logic, and just literally just started recording some songs in my lounge. Wrote started writing a few songs. I'd always kind of written with other people, but I'd never kind of written anything myself. But a few songs started coming to me, and then it just became a bit like an avalanche of ideas, really. And really, really shit ideas at the beginning. When I go back listening to it, they were the early stuff, which I felt was kind of like at the time was, I'm really doing something good here. And I listen back to it now. But I think over the last 5 years, I've kind of got better at it, and probably the last two or three records I've released, I'm really proud of. All of which, as I say, I just record at home, have the odd session musician involved, but otherwise, I just do it myself, and it's good fun. I mean, there's a lot of capacity for people to make music and record music themselves now. Yeah, you've got the internet, which enables you to just ping your stuff out there to the world, which is something 10, 15 years ago, maybe a bit longer, but you just couldn't have imagined doing. You had to send tapes off to God knows how many.
A&R.
And then just hope that someone might hear it. Whereas now, you can, if you do something good, it can be picked up on and shared a few times on social media. And before you know it, you've got one of my songs a few years ago, the first one which really did anything, it's a so-called Ruthless Thing.
Just when you had a video for when it was, I think you were down near like around where the Clifton Suspension Bridge is.
That one was Lockdown in 5. That did quite well as well.
Because I think that's when you first came onto my radar. I think when I first noticed. I'm not brown nosing. It's good.
Thank you. That was probably from the record where I first started feeling quite proud of what I was doing. But this song Ruthless Thing was from the album before, and it, and one day I just logged on to SoundCloud and it said 60,000 plays yesterday. And you just think, what? It'd been getting about 10 plays a day before that. And I was kind of like looking at every single stat I could to make sure it wasn't my mum.
Hit refresh.
Exactly. And I looked on that and it just gone nuts. But a good proportion of them have come from South Korea, because apparently folk, so I play kind of quite folky stuff, and folk music is really big over in the Far East. I discovered at that point,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's something. I had no idea, but that came out of the blue.
Have you ever gone out there? Played out there?
No, I haven't. I'm waiting to be invited.
Anyone listening who's South Korean based music promoter. There we go. But so in terms of that journey, so you're putting stuff out there. And I think it is an interesting point that you raise again there in terms of the fact that anyone can do it now, anyone can have their voice heard. And I've heard kind of people describe this before in a lot of the creative industries as this is a bit of a double-edged sword, because if anyone can put stuff out there, it means the competition's so much more fierce. But I would say I really disagree with that in the respect that so many of these industries have not been talent-based before, right? I mean, everyone has to have talent to get somewhere if they're in any creative. It doesn't matter who they know, that those old sort of adages, but you have to have talent to get anywhere in a creative industry generally, unless you're Brooklyn Beckham releasing photography albums. But now it feels a bit more egalitarian, should we say, I guess. It might be harder to have your voice distinguished from the crowd, but at least people can hear your voice.
You've got the opportunity. And it's funny because I mentioned earlier about my old man introducing me to Dire Straits. And so Mark Knopfler was actually the reason, he was the guy who made me pick up a guitar for the first time, I still buy all his songs and go and see him whenever I can. But his brother David, who was in the original lineup of Dire Straits, I was really disappointed about a year ago when he was running a crowdfunding campaign for his new record, because he's carried on making music, obviously in the shadow, the particularly large shadow of his brother, and it's he does okay in very small circles, but he was crowdfunding for his last record, and in the video that he did to accompany it, I kind of lost quite a lot of respect for him, because he immediately said, "There's it's too easy for people to to make music now. It's too easy for rubbish to flood the charts and to flood the internet. And you know, and that's why I'm asking for support in making a really good record. You know, that's and it just kind of suddenly, I lost a lot of respect for him right there. Just thinking, I lost a lot of respect for him right there. Just thinking, you know, you're kind of criticizing this amazing medium that we now have to allow anybody to get their music heard. And the cream will rise to the top. People who are rubbish won't get shared. They won't get. Yeah, they won't get anywhere. I mean, they can get their songs heard. They can do whatever. But you know, the good stuff will rise to the top. The not so good stuff, fine. But at least they've kind of done it, and they've got the opportunity to put stuff out there.
That's it, isn't it? Everyone deserves the right to be able to have their stuff heard. You know, if people have that spark of creativity, it's not about you don't meet these prerequisite. Vague ideals of what it what you should adhere to in order to have your stuff heard. It's like, you know, like you say, it's the ultimate kind of power of the consumer now, that they can choose what they want to listen to and what they don't want to listen to.
Exactly, and that's a really good thing. And you know, and obviously, you know, there is so much stuff out there, and often you will have to put money behind your social media, your promotion, in order to make sure it does kind of reach as many ears as possible, if that's what you're looking to do. But there is still that opportunity that you could just push something, you know, record a song and put it out there, and it could just bang, you know. And that's something which hasn't existed before in for an amateur or bedroom musician. And you know, we do hear about these people who like release a song on YouTube and end up getting signed up now, which is just the whole industry has been reinvented, really. And
I also think that, like, maybe it's something I tell myself to not break down and cry every single day. But I think that it's still a lot of this stuff is like, you know, just because you haven't made it per se, it doesn't mean that you're not good at what you do. There is still an element of luck to it. I mean, I recall like an old interview of Quentin Tarantino when he was talking about, like, people asking him, have you got any advice for anyone? His whole thing was like, you know, carry on working hard, but can't sugarcoat it. There's an enormous element of luck to getting anywhere in life. As to where I am now, I know that for me, there's probably 10,000, if not more, other guys that could be exactly where I am now. I just got the lucky breaks at the right time. And that's it, isn't it? A lot of it's about timing. It's about the mood. It's about everything. Just it's that perfect storm, isn't it, for your whatever it is, your passion, your art, to be received at that time, and it explodes.
Exactly, it's got to be received at the time at the right time by the right person who's in the right mood, who's got the right circumstances themselves to move it on to that next level. And you know, so like you say, the chances of it happening are slim, and it could happen to, you know, there's so much luck involved, but you've always kind of, yeah, but even if you don't want to achieve that, you can at least kind of record stuff and get it out to your mates and get it out to your follower, you know, to any followers you may accrue along the way. And and it's, you know, it's a great hobby to have. I mean, yeah, well, I love just kind of picking up my guitar, recording something, and sharing it. And it happens quite a lot when I've got two young children, and it's harder to kind of get out of to get out and play in the big venues and pubs so much anymore. But at the same time, I can now kind of have a few whiskies on a Friday night, and
the infamous whiskey sessions.
And just kind of like put a few requests, you know, put a call for requests out, and make a haphazard attempt at whatever anyone suggests. No song is too shit.
I think Under Pressure was it. You did Under Pressure, didn't you, through one of the whiskey sessions?
I might have had quite a lot of whiskey, because I don't remember that one. I've done a few Bowie ones.
Yeah.
Man Who Sold the World. Life on Mars.
Might be Life on Mars I'm thinking of.
Yeah, one's a favourite.
Yeah, it was strong addition to the whiskey sessions.
I never look at him in the next morning.
No?
No, I can't. I just, I think Kiefer Sutherland's one of those guys who's never watched an episode of 24. And
he says that.
He says that, but...
sits at home
watching it in slow motion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's it. Shoveling his face with popcorn.
Exactly. But yeah. But no, it's fantastic now that you can just be sat in your house and do something that anyone else in across the other side of the world can see instantly.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So, tell us, like, we've had the Tottenham part, had the music part. How did the two come together?
I've always loved Chas and Dave, which helps a lot when you're a musician and a Spurs fan. I think I've always just played Chas and Dave songs in a pretty informal setting. Normally, just in I've never really done one as part of one of my sets. I think I did Rabbit once at a wedding as a special request, which was quite hard by myself.
But, I was going to say.
And then I think about, when was it? Three, four years ago, I think, chatting to Windy.
That's the infamous Windy Coys.
Windy Coys for Come On You Spurs. I think I recorded a version. Yeah, we just got chatting about music. I think he'd come across some of my stuff and was kind enough to say some nice things about it. And we got chatting about maybe doing a version of Can't Smile Without You to raise money for Calm on the Fighting Cock. So I recorded a version of Can't Smile Without You, which was good fun. It was the first time I'd first time I've ever recorded Barry Manilow song. I'll give it that much, but. And then after that, I think I was chatting to, who was it? Kat and Martin from the Trust a fair bit, and spoke to them about possibly playing a set at the Trust barbecue at the Antwerp the year before last, which was attended by Ledley King. So yeah, I mean I've been to the Antwerp since it reopened.
I like how casually you just start. Yeah, you know. I was on the bill with Ledley King.
With the letters. And Paul Coit, of course.
Yeah, Coit.
But having gone to the Antwerp a few times before that since it reopened, and it's just the best pub in Tottenham.
It really is, isn't it?
It really is. It's so great.
No shade at the other pubs in Tottenham.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Antwerp is something special.
It really is. You walk in there and you just feel like you're at home. So I ended up doing a set of songs at the Trust event. I think it was meant to be two sets of about 45 minutes. It ended up being about four sets of an hour. It just went on and on, and beers were flowing. And it was right after we just lost to Newcastle 5-1, and which was just a horrible end to the season. But that night, that day and night at the Antwerp, I found kind of sorted my summer out. It kind of sent me Spurs wise going into the summer in a much better frame of mind than I had been after the Newcastle game, and it was just really good. And then shortly after that, spoke to Mike Lee at the Spurs show about playing at the Spurs show Christmas do again with Ledley, which was just so good.
What was he like as a bloke? Did you get much chance to chat to him when you were across the two events now?
Yeah,
you worked with him on.
Yeah, I mean the first event. I mean, it was a very kind of busy. I mean, I think you were there. It was a very busy, bustling space, and it was obviously full of. I've never seen so many grinning men in one place. Just as he was just walking around, and it was a, he had his chat with him, and it was you could speak to him and you'd have a photo taken him, but there wasn't too much else you could really do. Whereas at the Spurs show do, I played it with Chris Thomas, Chris T bassist on Twitter. And we kind of had a little backstage room where Ledley was as well. And that
must have been so surreal.
I just sat there in a tiny room with Ledley King, and I just had to keep looking at him thinking, you're Ledley King, you are. You're Ledley King. And after about 5 minutes of that, you know, the starstruckness dies down, and we just ended up just being able to chat for a reasonably long time about stuff which went from initially very Spursy to kind of then going quite mundane, and just chatting to him like a mate. He was just such a nice, genuine bloke. And Rich Grove, who you've had on recently, was I think his cousin was quite poorly at the time, and he asked if there's any chance of getting a quick video message from Ledley, and I'm sure Ledley gets asked to do this kind of thing all the time, but he just, no questions asked, just like recorded a lovely message for Rich's cousin on my phone, and just had just a really genuine, nice bloke.
He is. I mean, the circumstances under which I met him aren't quite as off of my own merit as yours are, but Charlotte surprised me once. The Tottenham Tribute Trust, they did a charity auction for chance to basically sit in a box and watch the Lyon Europa League Lyon game of perhaps 4 or 5 years ago now.
Two Bale free kicks.
Yeah, two Bale free kicks.
And a wonder goal by then.
Yeah, amazing. But yeah, to watch the game in a box with Ledley, there's about 4 or 5 of us in there, and I was sat with him, and I was completely fanboying the whole way. But he, like you say, I think two things I took from it are that, you know, while we're sat in this box, like 26 minutes on the thing, and you can hear the stadium all singing his name, and he seems like quite embarrassed by it, you know, he's type of guy that he was just so down to earth that he's like, you know, one of the other guys is like, how is that, mate? Like, that must be bizarre. And he's just like, well.
But you know, if he played on his, if he was fit enough to play in his last game, he'd have done a 26 minute send off, wouldn't he? He'd have walked off. He'd have got the other club to clap him off and everything like that. Because he's that type of logo.
He's
a gent.
Well, that's it. And the other thing I really found is that we are in this age where people are so sceptical of players, and do they care about the club, don't they? Is it just a job to them? But, you know, he didn't grow up a Spurs fan. He apparently, I think it's in his autobiography, he grew up a Liverpool fan, played in Millwall's youth, and obviously through Senrab, he then went to Millwall, I believe, for a short time, and then came over to Spurs, or at least went to a few Millwall games when he was a kid. You really get the feeling that he does love the club. He has a real genuine and strong affection for the club. At least that's what I
totally took that as well. Really did. I mean, you don't stay as a club. I mean, I'm sure they pay him reasonably well for it, but you don't kind of stay connected to a club if you don't care about them in that way. And he represents them everywhere. But yeah, I mean, just a real gent.
He must be gutted to see the sort of team we've got now, and just think, I was born just a couple of years later.
Exactly.
But even now, though, if it wasn't for his injury problems, you could see him slotting in Carling Cup games.
Definitely.
Not Carling, what is it now?
CC? No.
I don't think it's been Carling Cup for years, has it?
No, it's still the Wilmington Cup to me.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola Cup, sorry. Rumbellos.
Yeah. So right, okay, so you've played the Spurs show, you played the Antwerp thing. In terms of, like, because I just want to go back to that one though, the Antwerp game, because you're saying it's after the Newcastle game. How did you get the crowd going? Did you just go back on Spurs classics of that one? Did you play sort of any old covers? Did you play your own stuff? That must have been a pretty, like, that's like playing it awake, right?
I've got to admit, after. The week or so after the Newcastle game, I was thinking, this is going to be shit. It's going to be so depressing. And it was quite hard. But I'd say actually, I walked in there. I bumped into you as I walked in actually, and there was immediately like a bit of positivity, I think. And I think we'd all kind of, you know, hopefully after the disappointment of that Newcastle game, I think we were able to reflect on what had been a pretty immense season. And I think I did Can't Smile Without You quite early on, get that whistle going, and then it's just nice to mix that kind of stuff up with a few crowd pleasing covers. Please me anyway. I don't know if anyone else, but yeah, it was a really good day. It was really busy, and then you get all the Chaz and Dave stuff going as well, and some of them work better than others on just an acoustic guitar. But you know, when everyone's had a few, you know, you don't want to be the only one singing Spurs Are On Their Way to Wembley into a microphone with no one else singing along. And luckily that never turned out to be the case. I had Bruce Lee in particular belting it along with me in the far corner.
Get a few chances to sing Spurs Are On Their Way to Wembley this year, mate.
One or two for sure.
Do you think you'd ever write an original Spurs themed song? Have you ever toyed with the idea?
You know what? I have. I'm not going to lie. It's because, you know, the Chaz and Dave stuff, it was great. I mean, they were really good, well-written musical songs. They weren't just novelty Spurs songs. I mean, they kind of are, but they're still really well-crafted. And you don't get any good football songs out anymore. And you'd kind of think that there's a, like we were saying earlier, like the prevalence of the internet and the ability for anyone to kind of make themselves heard might have meant, yeah, there are some awful kind of YouTube videos of fan songs floating around.
But, hello.
Again.
Mate, that's a big indirect, mate.
No, yours is always good. But, but you know, what's the Rhapsody one?
To Team Rhapsody,
that was it. That was beautiful. That was, but
it was all Billy T's work, mate, to be honest.
But yeah, I mean, I think I'd need to put a day or two aside and really kind of just sit down and try and work out how to do it, because you know they need it. There's something when you listen to those songs, you know, they sound really straightforward. They sound really simple, just two or three chords or whatever. But they are memorable,
yeah.
And they were turned into chants. And they weren't just turned, you know, we don't just remember them because of the chants. We remember them because they're well-written, well-crafted mm-hmm. songs. And, yeah, it doesn't matter if they're just about football players. And, yeah, that's a big benchmark to kind of go up against when it comes to kind of like writing a new football song.
Because it's the boxes they ticked, isn't it, Chaz and Dave? Like you say, it's kind of like they've got that kind of fun pub type vibe about the Any Old Iron sort of old East London type knees up Mother Brown sort of vibe, but you can't, like, it's not to discredit in any way their musical attitude, because they are brilliant musicians, aren't they? And I've seen them play at Bestival before. Fantastic. Like, they're just consummate professionals, and yeah, they're such showmen as well. Like, they're so good, so talented. And you know, like we were talking about earlier, that perfect storm, that's kind of what they inhabited, wasn't it? I guess maybe when they released those, like the cup final songs, things were a bit less cynical then.
But also Spurs were in cup finals.
Yeah, touche.
You know, touché. It's like, who knows how, yeah, whether they would have, I mean, they were obviously successful in their own right, but who knows if they'd have been as popular amongst Spurs fans.
Do you think there is a room for, because given that your sort of music is very like focused but more downbeat than the Chaz and Davey type,
you say depressing?
No. I wouldn't say depressing. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But do you think there is that room to sort of do something maybe a bit different, that, you know, like something that you can slap on when we have lost our opening game to Newcastle away?
Well,
you know?
Maybe. I mean, again, Can't Smell Without You isn't the most upbeat song in the world, and I think, After we lost to Chelsea in the semi, I just went home and recorded a booze fueled version of that for Instagram, which kind of, you know, we were all feeling pretty deflated after that, and yeah, that was one which captured the mood. Couldn't really have done, although, oh god, who was it? I'm really sorry whoever asked me this because I can't remember who it was, but someone asked me to do a version of Can't Smile Without You, the music for Can't Smile Without You with the words of Ozzy's Dream. And
interesting.
Yeah, it was, and it kind of worked.
What's the future hold for you, mate, musically? You're gonna do any more Spursy themed things? You're gonna focus on your own stuff?
Yeah, I mean a bit of both, really. I mean, you know, since Kid Number One came along, on the day we lost to Chelsea 4-0 under Sherwood, it's all gone a bit quieter on the music front, really. Although Kid Number Two was born the day we beat West Brom 5-0 this season. We even got a tweet from Spurs official. So, that was obviously the highlight of my day.
My day. Yeah.
Since those two have arrived, you know, music's a bit more, it's all about fitting it in. You know, I've obviously got a full-time job now to pay for my baby's foods and nappies.
And life takes over, mate.
It really does. But, you know, I mean, as I consider myself a musician first and foremost. You know, I have to sit behind a desk 9 to 5 for work, but I'd much rather be sat behind a desk with a big mixing console on it than a PC and a load of spreadsheets. And you know, I just love performing live. And you know, I as a songwriter, you know, I get so much pleasure, or at least so much kind of gratitude out of playing, and nerves out of kind of bearing my soul, bearing my own songs to the world, whether it's online or in a pub or a music venue. But at the same time, I love last couple of years doing these Spurs days, just getting everyone singing along, with my mates. Basically, it's been it's great. So I'd love to I want to carry on doing that, but you know, hopefully September, October kind of time, I'll be locking myself away, recording probably a new 4 or 5 track EP. And once again, yeah, I mean, I'll put it out there. What will be, will be.
So where can we, everything you've recorded to this date, where can we track it down? Where can anybody who's listening listen to what you've produced so far?
Website is mitchellmusic.co.uk. Twitter is The Real Tom Mitch. There's a few links on there as well. And if you really want to hear some drunk, terrible covers, look up the hashtag Whiskey Sessions, spelt the Irish way with an E, in whiskey, that is. And you'll find some videos on Instagram there as well.
I can vouch, they're not terrible. He's being modest. They're good. It's a nice addition to a Friday dash weekend night when they do crop up, mate.
Let's see what we can do. Get another one on the go soon.
And there you have it. That was Mr. Tom Mitchell. Lovely bloke. Really nice guy. And he's very kindly agreed to let us play out the show with his cover of Can't Smile Without You. As he does touch on during the recording, this was recorded to help support the work that Calm are doing. That's a campaign against living miserably, which is, you know, basically assists to the awareness and helping to treat people with mental health issues in the UK. So you can find out more about them and donate to them at thecalmzone.net. Please do that. And here you go. Here's Tom's cover of Can't Smile Without You to see off the show. Away.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.